Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and prints.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, episode 112. Today we are joined by a reporter from the Honolulu Star Advertiser, Brian McGinnis. Brian, how's it going?
It's going good, Owen. How are you?
I am good. I'm just trying to get the levels right here on our phone podcast. Obviously, Brian isn't in studio with us today. That would take a 5.5 hour flight and a 3.5 hour drive on some level. So, Brian, I wanted to talk to you for a few reasons. With the Big West basketball season coming up, I want to get to actually women's basketball at some point too, because Cal Poly and Hawaii have had some really fun women's games over the past couple of years, or especially last year, I guess. But I wanted to kind of dig into the men's team here in a second. First of all, though, I met you, I think, 2 years ago at the Big West Conference Tournament down in Anaheim, and having met you and in person and seen you, my first question was, where are you from originally? So, Brian, where are you from originally?
I actually, as I think I told you then, I'm born and raised in Hawaii, and went to school at the University of Hawaii, and now I'm covering the team. Although I've had to put aside whatever kind of rooting interest I once had, and there's been a lot of things lately that's made me glad I did so, because it's been a rough go of it lately for the basketball program there. But pretty much lived my whole life on Oahu, and can't say that I've regretted any minute of it.
Nice. I've been to two Hawaiian islands, but Oahu isn't one of them. So I think that's the next one I want to get to and see the Pearl Harbor Memorial and all that kind of stuff there. I think that would be super fun to visit, the biggest city in Hawaii, in Honolulu there. How long have you covered basketball? I would imagine you probably like worked for the student paper when you were there and covered it in some capacity there.
You're right. I spent 1 year at the University of Hawaii student newspaper, the Kaleo, it's called, and I was lucky enough to cover the basketball team for one season while I was there. They made the NIT that year, and that was actually the last year they had a home sellout. They hosted an NIT game, and that really kind of was exciting for me, and it just kind of really made me want to do it kind of as a career. So, I bounced around part-time a little bit for a couple of years after graduating in 05, and became full-time at the Honolulu Star Bulletin in 2007. Since then, that paper merged with the other daily newspaper in Honolulu to become the Honolulu Star Advertiser, the other newspaper formerly being called the Honolulu Advertiser. So
there you go.
That's kind of how Star Advertiser came to be. And that's been going since 2010.
Got it. And with the Star Advertiser, I know that obviously you cover, just about all the Hawaii sports, especially in the Big West Conference. I've seen you tweet about women's soccer over the past couple of months a lot. How many road trips do you get to take, though, off of the island in terms of going somewhere else with a team in any given, I guess, school year?
Right. When UH entered the Big West a few years ago, there was talk that we'd be going on more basketball road trips, specifically just because the travel distance was much more manageable from the WAC days, when there were, road trips to locales like Ruston, Louisiana, or Moscow, Idaho, or, Logan, Utah. Every road trip being now, at least conference-wise, being in California, there was talk that I'd get to go on some of those. Unfortunately, it hasn't transpired to this point, mostly because UH hasn't really made a solid non-conference run. When they've had good records like last season, I believe like a 10-3 going into conference play, they had more or less a cream puff schedule, and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of thought that they could really just, you know, go on a huge tear through conference play.
Got
I'm
it.
Sure the team felt they could, but they ended up going 9-7, 20-win season, but did not actually get into any postseason match because they went 1-done in the Big West Conference tournament again.
Right.
Well, Cal Poly was making their great run all the way. So.
Got it.
Long answer short, don't get to go on too many road trips, just the conference tournament, and if they play an inter-island game, I'll go to that as well.
Got it. And again, we're here with Brian McGinnis from the Honolulu Star Advertiser. I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned that was the last time that the Stan Sheriff Center was sold out for a home game, you said, was when you were in school still, like what, 05, is that what you said?
Yeah, that year I covered the team would have been the, I believe, the 2003-04 season.
Got it. So that would have been, you know, almost, well, yeah, it's over 10 years ago now. The Stan Sheriff Center holds, you know, over 10,000 people. Honolulu is a big city, too, so it's not like it would be out of the question with a really great team to sell the place out. Who was the coach back then? Can you kind of give me just a little bit of context for people in San Luis who knew that Hawaii wasn't in their conference and then now they are, but who don't really have the context for Hawaii basketball over the past 10 years or so, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So the Stan Sheriff, it does seat, it's like 10,300 people, I believe, is like the official count. They have had sellouts since then in women's volleyball because that's very big over here.
Sure.
That's actually probably the biggest draw next to football, of course. And then basketball maybe is like a close third. But they probably average, these days they probably average about 3,500 to 4,000 actually in, you know, as far as turnstile. They'll send out like a bigger figure for like, it's issued, which is never accurate.
Right.
But anyway, back then in 2003-04, that was Riley Wallace was the coach still. You know, he was the winningest coach in program history. He went 20 years. And it's funny, I mentioned him because his name came up when this whole coaching uncertainty just happened that I'm sure we'll talk about.
Oh, yeah. UH. Oh, yeah.
That never transpired. He's 73 now. But back then, you know, they were on a nice run of back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances in 2001 and 02, and like two or three NITs after that in the years right after those NCAAs. So they had a really nice run of postseason years. You know, the crowds were into it. Seemed like every year they had a dead-eye shooter or a real go-to guy on the perimeter. That kind of steadily dried up, and then Riley's longtime assistant, Bob Nash, when Riley retired, Bob took over for 3 years, and that's really when I started covering the beat, and they just did not have a lot of success under Bob. Real nice guy. A lot of people wanted him to succeed. Just didn't happen, and that's how we got to the Gib Arnold era.
Got it. And Gib Arnold, before he, did he resign or was he fired a couple weeks, last week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, Gib was definitely fired.
Okay.
That caused a huge... the firestorm, so to speak, over here.
Sure.
With how abruptly it happened. And,
sure.
You know, we at the newspaper were reporting leading up to that UH was going to be imposing some kind of self-sanctions in advance of the NCAA investigation into the program, which is still not, NCAA has still not sent their letter of allegations.
So it hasn't even been, right, so it hasn't even been, there hasn't even been allegations made, but the way the NCAA works is that they count on the schools to essentially conduct the larger part of the investigation to be as hard on themselves as they can so that the NCAA can, you know, can say, okay, you were hard enough on yourself, we're just going to do a little bit more, or hey, you weren't hard enough on yourself, we need to do a lot more in terms of sanctions. Before we get to that part of it, what exactly happened? Is it still kind of unclear? It seems kind of hazy to me. What exactly happened, and who exactly was involved? Can you kind of take me through that?
Yeah, I mean that sentiment, Owen, is kind of that of the general public, really. Everyone who's quote unquote not in the know,
right?
They have almost no clue, because when UH fired Coach Arnold and assistant coach Brandon O'Connor, they did not provide any rationale or reasoning for doing so in the brief press release they sent out, which was maybe like five paragraphs.
So it was a press release, not a press conference.
Right. There was no press conference. We at the Star Advertiser broke the story first that Arnold was out, which was a big shocker for a lot of people.
And yeah.
UA sent out its own press release between half hour and hour later. So to this day, they haven't said, that was last week, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't said, why they felt they needed to make that move, other than the fact that people could maybe put two and two together that we reported self-sanctions were coming. And then that happened like a day or two later. And so you could surmise those are part of what UH felt it needed to do in advance of whatever the NCAA's decision will be coming up. Now, as far as what actually happened for the investigation to actually occur, it all started back. This started in January of last season when assistant coach Akana altered a notarized federal document used to admit a foreign student athlete. I guess the way it works is if you're a foreign student athlete, you need to prove or your family needs to prove they have X amount of dollars in a bank account so that if worse comes to worse and like the player's scholarship falls through, they can, live with a certain amount of money assured in their account and not become like, a person on the street or
right.
just totally, out of luck.
In a foreign country.
Right. So right. Exactly. Any foreign student, I believe that applies to. So the document that said this player, Stefan Yankovic, had that money was altered by the assistant coach to make it a higher figure so that he could be admitted. And so UH self-reported that soon after it occurred in January. The NCAA opened its investigation in March, and it's been going on ever since.
Wow. But they haven't sent official allegations yet. It sounds like,
right.
like they do from time to time, and I'm no expert in the sanctions category. I'm not like a USC fan or something like that right now, but generally they give these schools the option to kind of do as much self-discipline as possible and then go from there.
Right.
The timing of the thing is kind of what baffles me. Actually, prior to this soccer season, the Cal Poly men's soccer coach, Paul Holler, resigned kind of with similar timing that it was like, I think 2 days before training camp was set to start. We get this press release that the coach is resigning, and if you're going to resign, it seems like pretty much like the worst time in the whole world to do something like that. Same with the university in terms of knowing probably what they knew about. I don't know what new information would have come out between January and now to warrant like the timing of the firing, right? That's got to be something that's confusing for people in Hawaii.
Yeah, it was stunning. It was baffling. I would say the only reason I think they felt they had to now is because the NCAA was said to be very close to releasing its findings. So I guess they had to, get out ahead of that. I don't know if the NCAA, if that's intentional on their part or if they're finally just at the point where they're, comfortable with what they have as far as backing up their allegations with fact. And, they were conducting a ton of interviews for months, interviewing in some cases the same people two or three times.
Wow.
Just as we heard there were inconsistencies, from person A to person B to player C kind of thing. And then they were like, okay, somebody's lying here and we have to find out where the, truth is and that kind of thing.
So right. Right.
It was getting dragged out. And, from the document issue that I mentioned, once they really started prying into the program, it really spiderwebbed out to all aspects of the program, from practice hours to, you know, possible alleged impermissible benefits for the student athletes to, you know, untruths about what was said previously in interviews. And it was just, that's our understanding so far. And we won't know absolutely for sure until that letter comes out. But those are some of the reasons I think UH felt like it had to make a move.
Right, right. And, you know, the timing, like I said, you know, just couldn't have been worse. They fire their head coach. They fire an assistant coach. I looked up just kind of for fun to see kind of who was left and how many coaches were listed on their roster. And it looks like there's just two of them at this point. There's Benji Taylor and an assistant, and then there were a bunch of, I think, what were described as admin assistants. Is that right at this point?
Yeah. So right, there's basically two full coaches on the court. Benji Taylor, who is now the acting head coach and has been more or less assured of that position for the remainder of the 14-15 season. And then Sink Hugh Carey, who had just come on as a new assistant coach under Gib Arnold. So he's still around, probably wondering what he got himself into a little bit.
Well, yeah, and, I mean, but him being around is probably okay because he wasn't here back then, right? I mean, that's,
sure.
That's
yeah, yeah. Part of the... he was not part of what had gone on previously.
Right, right.
Benji's looking to elevate one of those administrative assistants you mentioned into a full assistant position, and that's still kind of ongoing. And then he's looking to bring in somebody else from the outside right prior to the start of the regular season to round out the staff.
Because you got to have three assistant coaches. I mean, and you know, you're already at a disadvantage in terms of scouting, in terms of work that needs to be done. I'm sure it's just right. Going to be really interesting to see, you know, how this UH team handles it. One of my favorite players on UH, actually, probably my favorite guy to watch recently too. What's the since the Gib Arnold story came out now? What's the story with Isaac Fotu?
Yeah. And that's been the real kind of 1-2 combo of bad news that's really laid the program low right now is Gib Arnold getting fired, and then in the days since, a lot of speculation about Isaac Fotu leaving to go pro, which became official on Monday, and Isaac put out a statement saying he is leaving the program to go pro. And he's probably going to latch on to a team back in his native New Zealand, I would think. There's one team in particular that's really tried to get him, called the New Zealand Breakers.
Yep, they're in the NBL, right, in Australia, the Australian
correct.
League. Yeah. I've been following that closely because former Cal Poly guard Drake Uyu is in his second season with the Perth Wildcats, who won the championship last year, played with James Ennis. I think they're actually roommates for a period of time out in Perth, and Drake's back there for a second season this year. I've had him on the podcast as well. So, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with the Australian league, and Fotu being a player from New Zealand, that makes a ton of sense for him to go there to play.
Yeah, it does. So they were, you know, they made some, at least at that level of basketball, they made some fairly strong offers after his freshman season at UH when he was co-freshman of the year in the Big West. You know, then he turned those down, went on to become first team all-league last year, was tapped to the preseason Big West conference team going into this season. So, you know, with him gone, it really changes the face of the team into something kind of unknown. I mean, you got Garrett Neville, the shooting guard. He's the only real proven entity from last year who's left. Other than that, you've got, you know, a couple guys who are back, you know, bench players, and then a whole new crop of who guys were either role players or redshirting last year or totally new. So,
right.
For that reason, I think they're going to be fighting to stay, you know, out of last place and fighting to get into the Big West tournament for a lot of the season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I honestly, I've been for different reasons. Cal Poly has had guys who've gone down over the off season, and yesterday or 2 days ago, found out that Taylor Sutliff, who, you know, was going to be a contributing shooting guard, is also having ACL surgery. Zach Gordon, who is the backup center, and was going to compete for a lot of minutes with Brian Bennett, also, you know, is out. And so I think it's really interesting now when you look at the Big West, there's probably four or five of these teams that that could be left out on the outside looking in when it comes down to the end of the season. You know, I also think, you know, a team like this is such an interesting team to watch now. You know, you kind of had a proven entity, like you said, with Fotu in the middle. You had a lot of talented guys maybe around him, and now it's these talented guys who either are going to kind of embrace it, be able to play at some level, you know, at some kind of a high level, or like you said, kind of risk not even making the tournament this year. It has to be just like one of the most intriguing teams to watch, I think, in the conference for good reasons or bad.
Yeah, there's a pretty big question mark here right now.
Yeah.
And as far as the fan base goes, I think they're still kind of reeling from the last 8 or 9 days of news. They'll get a better idea, at least here, of, you know, what the product on the floor looks like. They play an exhibition against a local D2 team, Hawaii Pacific University. So we'll all kind of know, you know, where they're at and how their chemistry is under their new acting head coach, being that, you know, they just went through some pretty traumatic events. Yeah. Just days before the season.
How talented are the guys that they brought in? Like, what was the level of expectation for those guys who are maybe freshmen or who are kind of newer to the program, who haven't had a lot of playing time yet?
Yeah, I'd say the guy that hopes are pinned highest on is Negus Webster-Chan. He's a sophomore, redshirt sophomore, small forward. He transferred in from Missouri, sat out all the last season. You know, he's from Toronto area, pretty talented guy overall. You know, he's good at a lot of different aspects, shooting, passing, dribbling, rebounding. I wouldn't say he's great at any one of those aspects. So I think there's going to be games where he's fairly productive and leads the way for him, and then other games where maybe he'll, you know, struggle a little bit. We'll see how that goes. But
yeah.
I'd say hopes are highest on him. There's also a 2-point guard named probably going to get the start, at least in this exhibition, is Roderick Bobbitt. He's a junior college transfer out of Indian Hills in Iowa. And he looked competent, you know, a little bit of scoring. He's very good stealing the ball in the open court. So it looks like, at least for now, he's going to be the starter. There was some thought that Quincy Smith, who was last year's backup guard, point guard, would get the nod. But he hurt his back in the preseason, landed hard on a layup attempt. And he's only just come back after missing about 2 weeks. So right now, Roderick's the guy. So between Roderick, Garrett Nevels, Negus Webster-Chan, those are going to be kind of the, you know, the guard or wing players who are going to be counted on to lead the way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of who steps up. One last question about the men's team, because I forgot to ask it when we were talking about Fotu. Is the reason that he left, and I haven't read his release yet, I just saw the tweet that he sent out. It's been a busy few days for me here as well. Is the thought that the reasoning he left was because of everything that's going on? Was there anything that came out about him in terms of somebody said he was ineligible? Am I missing something there?
Yeah, that's a good question, though. I mean, in Isaac's statement when he announced his intention to go pro, he said, you know, his reason for leaving was because Coach Arnold and Coach Akana, who were very important to him, were both fired. And I know he was very close to Coach Akana.
Right.
However, he was also deemed ineligible, which came out the day after Arnold was fired. He's been deemed ineligible by UH in advance of the NCAA's findings. So it's believed that he received some form of impermissible benefits for a student athlete. And he would have had to sit an indefinite number of games. You know, when the NCAA finally rules and UH perhaps appealed it, they could have maybe pared it down to, we were thinking probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 games Isaac might miss.
But that's kind of moved now, so yeah.
He's gone pro.
Yeah, and if the NCAA wanted to, they could have just waited to come out with their findings too. They've waited, you know, this many months already. They could have just waited while UH had him suspended indefinitely as well, I'm sure, which is, you know,
right.
These investigations are never, they're never the same, and they're never super fun for anybody who's a fan or who's around any program, that's for sure. I want to kind of switch gears to maybe a little bit more positive news, and that is that in the Big West women's basketball this season, and that's also starting up in a week or so here, a week and a half, I think, maybe, depending on what team we're talking about. We're talking about two teams in the Big West who are tabbed to be second and third, I think, or maybe third and fourth, second and fourth in the
second and third.
Yeah, I felt like it was second and third behind Cal State Northridge, who ran away with the championship game last year, of course, at the Honda Center. Northridge beat Cal Poly. Cal Poly's been in two straight championship games now, and had just two, I think, amazing games with Hawaii last year. Can you kind of describe this? I feel like it's kind of a budding rivalry between between Hawaii and Cal Poly in terms of women's basketball. And it you know, I'm picturing a semifinal game here, Brian. I don't know how else to think about it.
Yeah, it's been a fun battle so far. In these two past years, they've gone head to head in the conference. I'd say that you know, Cal Poly definitely got the better of that rivalry last year. I believe they won all three games, including a very improbable one here on the island, in which I believe they came back from 4 points down in like the last 11 seconds of regulation and then won in overtime.
Yeah, Taryn Garza, I think, had the putback at the end of that game.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was a real gut punch loss for the Wahine here. But they've been some fun battles. I mean, last year with Molly Schlemmer and Elegato, and they just kind of seem to have Hawaii's number. And I know Ariana's back for one more year. I think they're, correct me if I'm wrong, there's maybe some thought that she was going to
finish
her career after last year. But.
Yeah, she had graduated, I think, and actually didn't let anybody know, I think, until August that she was coming back. I did a interview with Faith Mimna last week or the week before, and so they were planning on, you know, life without Ariana. I guess she spent a summer with the Sparks doing an internship down in LA, and you know, everybody down there told her to go back and, you know, take advantage of your last year if you can do it, and so she's back in slow this year.
Okay.
Faith Mimna is definitely pleased about that.
Yeah, it makes for a more interesting, you know, conference battle overall. So that's definitely great for the Big West, having a player like her back. As far as UH is concerned, this coming year on the women's side, they really got some infusion of size. They lost, you know, their most reliable post player in the last 4 years, Camila Jackson. She's graduated. So the team's going to have a bit of a different look. They're going to be led by Shauna Kuehu again, who is playing her sixth season, if you can believe that.
Oh, wow.
She's been granted one redshirt year and basically another medical hardship year. So
right, a medical redshirt. Yeah.
So she's going to be leading the way. They have a host of new players that I'm still, you know, trying to learn all their names, and I'm actually not covering the women like I was in the past 5 or 6 years. It's been taken off my hands, if you will, to one of our other people on staff, Jason Conachero, who does a real nice job, but
sure.
I'll be still following them, and I'm, you know, assuming the men, I can't assume, but if they get to the Big West tournament, I'll be covering both teams up there as well.
Got it. Well, you know, I imagine there's plenty to write about the men on a daily basis at this point, you know, with all the unknown. You know, it's definitely, you know, an interesting thing to have happen, you know, in soccer. And I'll just kind of use this as an example, but, you know, the Cal Poly soccer team came out and they beat, you know, they won at North Carolina State with an interim head coach. They had, you know, there were stories about maybe a recruit or two who, you know, just ended up not showing up because the head coach, you know, had resigned 2 days before camp, you know, stuff like that you hear about. And the team kind of galvanized at the beginning of the year, and then you started to see like injuries chip away. And at this point in the season, today they're going to be playing with a chance to either be a second seed in the Big West North Division, which is how they break it up into two 4-team divisions in men's soccer, or, and I know men's soccer for all you Hawaii fans isn't really a big topic, but they could either be a second seed or they could not make the tournament. So it'll be a really interesting day today in terms of outcomes, who wins what, you know, with soccer where you get 3 points for a win. You know, it'll be interesting to see. But it's just been so intriguing to me to watch this team that when something happens like this at the beginning of the year, you know, I feel like I know what's going to happen. I know what I'm going to get out of Long Beach State. Okay. They're going to be a top, probably a top two team, maybe a top three team in the conference tournament. They're going to be, have as good a chance as anybody else by the end of the year to win the conference tournament. You know, I know that about Long Beach State with Dan Munson. I know that UC Irvine, I know that UC Santa Barbara, I know what I'm going to get from these teams. This year, Hawaii is going to be a fun team to watch for me because I just don't know what I'm going to get. And I think Hawaii, honestly, is going to beat the men's team. They're going to beat I'm going to go ahead and predict they're going to beat a UC Irvine, a Santa Barbara, and or a Long Beach State at some point during this year. You know, maybe even like on the road, you know, there's going to be some kind of crazy victory like that. Whether they, you know, are able to win enough of those kinds of games to make the tournament, like you said, is still left to be seen, but only one team sits out and so, you know, you win a couple of those games like that and you have enough talent to do that, I think, still in Hawaii. I don't know that for sure, but I know Hawaii recruits pretty talented guys usually. You know, you stand a chance. So I think, you know, anything's possible this season, except maybe at this point, you know, except like UC Irvine not making the tournament. I don't think that's going to happen. they're looking pretty strong, and I don't think they like how last season ended.
Not at all. I know those guys got a chip on their shoulder. Yeah. Russell Turner went on the one of the radio shows here locally a few weeks ago, and he sounded very confident in you know his team's talent returning, and as well he should, because
I would be too.
Proven, yeah, it's those guys. So
and you know who I think is unsung on that team? I love Davis. I love NJI. I think Jackson, right? He's the shooting guard who was a freshman last year. Is that his name, Jackson?
Luke Nelson.
Nelson. Okay. Sorry. Luke Jackson played for Oregon, I think. Yeah. Luke Nelson. yeah, that guy's super impressive to me. I think he might be the key to them, like, really kind of taking the next level at Irvine. Are you allowed to vote in preseason polls, and is Irvine your pick in the Big West this year?
Yeah, I did vote in the media preseason poll on both sides, men and women. And on the men's side, I did pick Irvine. It was a relatively easy choice, I thought. And I believe the order I went with after that was Santa Barbara with, you know, Al Williams coming back. I went Northridge third with all the talent that Reggie Theus has back, plus a couple new infusions,
yeah,
transfer players.
Yeah, and did you read today that some of the players got suspended at Northridge?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that was you have to check that out. That was a release I read this morning, I believe. It's just a super short release on their website for the men's basketball team. The AD couldn't say who it was. It said like violation of team and or school rules or something like that. And that's like they cited what is it, the FERPA or whatever? Not FERPA, but HIPAA? That's the one. They cited the HIPAA as a reason why they couldn't talk about who it was or how it was. But I guess we'll see who plays in their opener here coming up.
I'll have to see what happens out of that.
Sorry to spring that on you, Brian McInnes.
It's okay. After that, I think I went Long Beach, Cal Poly, Hawaii at number six.
So you had Cal Poly ahead of Hawaii, even with the coach and Fotu, huh? That's interesting.
I did.
The one difference I think that I had was that I put Long Beach State second, because I think Long Beach State is Long Beach State, and they're, you know, we can think that they're going to be like a fourth or fifth best team, but they're always tougher than that. Dan Munson does a really great job. Tyler Lamb, I think, you know, is knows this conference a little bit better now, and I think he's got skills in his senior year, along with Caffey, how long has Caffey been there? Like 7 or 8 years, maybe?
I think he's going on a decade. I don't know.
Was he one of the original 49er basketball players?
Yeah. I think he owns like every record in their stat book by now.
Totally. Like as of last year. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm a big fan of guard play, and I think the Long Beach State team definitely has that. So there you go. That was my like big, I guess it wasn't a sleeper, but it was a it was, I think Long Beach State's going to be better than most people think. And after, after Hawaii is sixth, how did you rate like the last three teams for yourself?
I believe I brought it up with Davis after Hawaii. You know, I know some people pick them ahead of Hawaii, with guys like, Corey Hawkins and, they have a few players who like missed the entire season last year who they had back. So
JT Adenrele?
Yeah, I believe he's one of them. And the coach's son. Yeah.
Tyler Less. Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, but Richard.
Okay.
Big man.
Uh-huh.
I believe he's back. And
yeah.
So after that, Fullerton at number 8 and UC Riverside, who I think was the consensus team bringing up the rear at number 9.
Yeah, but I feel like they're kind of closing the gap, the Fullerton Davis Riverside contingent. I don't know, at least in terms of bringing in new guys and guys who might be talented. I don't know. I haven't seen them play yet, but I kind of I always hope for parity and I always hope for chaos in a conference like this, especially kind of at the bottom. And it always just kind of makes it more fun when you're not quite sure what's going to happen, Brian.
Yeah, you know, and there was some talk, at least in some circles, about the Big West having at least a potential second bid to the NCAA tournament if a team like Irvine, you know, can really have some big non-conference wins and then kind of roll through league play. If they were losing the tournament, there was some thought that they could maybe boost their RPI high enough to get some consideration at least, which would be, you know, pretty wild for the Big West, you know, given that it's been an automatic one bid league for quite a while now.
Yeah, that would be huge. And honestly, like with the addition of Hawaii, that was actually one of the things that I thought of when I heard that Hawaii was coming to this conference, is that, you know, you have Hawaii coming, you have Long Beach, and you have Irvine that was on, you know, on the up and up. You know, you have a Northridge team that has a, you know, former NBA coach. So they're, you know, they're going to go up. They're going to continue to get better. You know, this is a conference that can have a couple of bids potentially over the course of the next few years. Of course, the San Diego State edition that never happened was certainly a consideration there. But even now, I think it's a conference that I don't think it would be out of the question for two bids. And that would be really cool for sure. Brian, I really appreciate the time. Any parting words? Any things that where can people find you online? I know it's at Brian_McInnis, McInnis. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is my Twitter handle, and so I'm always going to be tweeting out something about Hawaii basketball just each and every day. And if you have at least a passing curiosity, given the events that transpired over here, you know, in the last week or so, you know, shoot a tweet at me or something, and I'll be happy to try to fill you in best I can. But it's going to be an interesting time here all season, I think, right up until whenever their season ends, whether it's in the Big West tournament or not. It's going to be, you know, just the uncertainty, the drama. It's going to be high interest, even if the product on the court isn't what a lot of people hoped it would be. And stay tuned, I guess that's all I can say.
It seems like it's the kind of a story that stuff could just kind of gradually filter out over the course of a year or something like that, where, you know, every couple weeks or once a month you get kind of some kind of a random tidbit about something that happened or something that transpired, you know, good or bad, you know, good for the university or bad for the university. It just seems like one of those growth stories that might not just, you know, go away super quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, we'll stay tuned. I know I stay tuned and follow Brian on Twitter. Is that the best way for people to follow you, follow your stories, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at. I also have a blog called Court Sense. If you Google it, it'll probably come up, but I'm always linking to it on my Twitter account. So, it's hard to miss if you follow me on there.
Court Sense. Is that a Hawaii basketball blog?
Yep, just entirely about the Hawaii basketball team. It's based on the wing of our newspaper's website, based on Hawaii athletics. It's called HawaiiWarriorWorld.com.
So okay.
You can check us out there as well.
Cool, I will. And Brian, I really appreciate it. Thanks again, and maybe I'll see you in March in Anaheim. That would be cool again.
All right, Owen.
All right, take care, man. All right, take it easy.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out.